And now for another episode, Heard It Through the Rose Vine, with your host, the creator of Black Rose Writing, Raygun Brody.
Greetings and salutations. This is Raygun Brody, the host of Heard It Through the Rose Vine, signing on for another episode. Yes, we are still here. We're bypassing the normal preamble today and getting right to the meat and potatoes. I know our listeners will be extremely disappointed to not hear Christopher Miller and myself ramble on before our guest interview, wink, wink, but it is what it is. We've got such a great guest. I want to make sure there's enough time to crunch some serious numbers and talk some algorithms. So without further ado, let's get right to Dave Chesson. Our guest today is the creator of Kindlepreneur.com and publisher Rocket, Dave Chesson. Dave is an expert on helping authors optimize their keywords and discover the right keywords for both their book's metadata and also for Amazon advertising. Having worked with such authors as Orson Scott Card, Kevin J. Anderson, Ted Decker, and more, his tactics help both fiction and nonfiction authors of all levels get their books discovered by the right readers. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Thank you. It's really good to be here.
So I'm sure you're aware of this, but I did a little research again, and then obviously, you know, social media, we're back and forth and able to see other people and stuff. But you actually live less than 30 miles away from Ingram's main headquarters in Laverne, Tennessee.
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah. So I took our staff. I've gone a couple times, but I took most of our staff to the Ingram. They do an Ingram Indie Days last fall. So we actually stayed in Smyrna and got to see all the print facilities and everything. So that was pretty cool.
Nice. Yeah, that's a really cool facility. It's also great because a lot of people in the industry end up coming through Nashville and they're like, hey, I'm going to be there for Ingram. If you want to meet up? It's like, sure. Sounds good.
Yeah. So we talked about this already, but I know your daughter is a college athlete. How's she handling the sports world coming to a screeching halt?
Yeah, it was a major bummer. She plays softball for Lehigh University, a D1 school, and she was leading the nation for home runs per game. And her batting average was over 400, and she played against some nationally ranked teams during that time period. So, I mean, she was really cruising, and it was looking like it was going to be a great year. She did amazing last year, but this was, like, on a whole new level. So, and she's only a sophomore. So when they canceled it, it was just like, what a letdown. But she's just such a great kid. She's got a really good spirit about her, and she's like, all right, well, ready to start training again. So I'm like, good on you, gal. So she's right. Dealing with it.
Right. I played college sports, and just knowing I have a family rich in baseball. And so it's like one of those things where, you know, the timing and everything of just being where you feel so good at the plate, and, you know, like, you're not thinking second thoughts. You're just going up there and reacting and hitting, and everything's going well. And then, you know, when that gets on sync, for something to take it all away, I could imagine it's not the best feeling. It's like, if you're batting like 160, it's probably like, no big deal. But
yeah, she was batting 480 to be exact, and I mean, and it was one third of the season through, so she's playing against like ASU and Ohio State and James Madison, and it didn't matter who it was. Which pitcher, which team. She was just doing it. She saw beach balls. Now she's seeing the inside of her room. So, oh well.
Yeah. That was the school part. Yeah, that just goes on. But yeah, I think I would have been pretty disappointed if any of my college sports career would have got, just abruptly ended like right now. It would have been tougher to handle. The school part, no worries there.
True.
Before we get into the metadata and logistics, what are you currently reading right now?
I am in the thick of the Wheel of Time series. And for any of the fantasy fans out there, you know that that's like what is it, like 13 books,
Yes.
Hundreds of hours of Audible. Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm a huge fan of Brandon Sanderson. I absolutely like, I haven't read a book of his I didn't like. And the fact is that Brandon got his fame by picking up where the original author of The Wheel of Time left off. And like, what is the name of the original author? I can't remember. But he died, I think, after like the ninth or 10th book. And Brandon was just kind of a young up and comer. I mean, when I was talking with Orson Scott Card and Kevin J. Anderson, they were saying, yeah, back in the day, you know, Brandon would show up, he'd be in the front row, he'd be taking notes, he'd follow us at parties and writing stuff. And now he's Brandon Sanderson, you know? And so they handed him that project. And from what I've seen, from what other people have told me, he might get credited as one of the best ever authors to pick up on somebody else's classic and continue its excellence. So from that, I'm like, all right, that's it. I got to read this whole thing. So I'm digging in. So far, I'm on book two, which is already thousands of pages. Good Lord.
Yeah.
But it's okay. But I've heard from people it really picks up after like book three or four or so. And I'm like, all right, let's do this.
So I promise this was not predetermined between Dave and I, but the question turned out to be really funny because I just started The Way of Kings by Brandon.
Oh, I love that book.
So
that
I read all the Mistborn.
That might be my favorite.
Yeah, I read all the Mistborn. I'm done with those until the new one. I think there's one more that he still has to write, but I read all of those. That's where I started. And so then I read a little horror, I read a little standalones for a while because I was like, okay, The Way of Kings, from what I understand, this is, you know, this is Brandon Sanderson's, you know, George R. R. Martin or, you know, whatever, Stephen King's Dark Tower. This is his big piece that's going to be
a magnum opus.
Yes. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to wait on that. It's 1,000+. I'm not, the page count doesn't intimidate me. I'm a George R. R. Martin reader. I love the 1,000+ page books. But I was like, I need to read something else for a little while because this is, you know, when you get in a fantasy world, you got to invest. You got to get your brain working. And so I started A Way of Kings maybe 3 or 4 days ago, somewhere in there. So I'm ready. And it's like I read the prologue, kind of got in the about halfway, maybe the first chapter, and then about middle chapter two. For me, like books have two effects. Oh, I guess they have more than two, but but the good ones have two effects. You get either one where it's like, okay, it's entertaining and I'm going to finish it because it's entertaining. But you just, like for me, I just read at night and when I have time, I read. But the good ones, like Way of Kings, you start thinking about when you're going to get to read it or you start finding time to read it. And that to me is when you've, you know, it's like a magical TV show. It's like you can't wait. So I'm pumped so far. Way of Kings is got me hooked.
Now, I got to give a bit of a caveat out there because I recommend that book a lot because it is my favorite fantasy book. The series is just mind-blowing. However, here's what I say. If you are a big fantasy fan, you'll love it from the beginning because you'll see what Brandon is doing. I think he is like the modern-day king of world building. However, if you're just new to fantasy, okay, or, you know, you kind of like it and you dabble, you have to get at least halfway through the book until it really picks up. And I've had like people who are in that category and they're just like, Dave, I don't get it, man. You've been so good on recommendations. This one, it's taking a long time. And I'm like, he's building. He's doing that slow mic drop build and
yeah,
just get there. And when they get there and they get to the end of the book, they're like, oh my gosh, you were so right. I'm like, exactly. But there's that key difference. Hardcore fantasy fans will love it from the beginning. Kind of newer, kind of I like fantasy. It'll take you till halfway, but then it's worth the ride.
Yeah, you're like, it's 1,124 pages. You gotta, it's not 1,000 pages because it's super fast and just gonna, it's because it's got the content. He's setting it up. It's kind of, it took me two tries to, I don't know if, I mean, I'm sure you have, but I don't know if you've read the Patrick Rothfuss, you know, Name of the Wind.
Nope.
So I would recommend that one to you if you ever. So he's kind of in that George R. R. Martin where a lot of readers don't like him anymore because I think he's going on like an 8, 9, 10 year between books 2 and 3 right now.
Nah.
But yeah. Books 1 and 2 are so good in The Name of the Wind. They're just the King Killer Chronicles is the series, and Name of the Wind is the first book. And it's the heavy world building and all the terms. And it took me two tries. I read about, you know, whatever frame of mind you're in, but I made it about 20 or 30 pages and I just couldn't do it anymore. And then maybe a year later, so I started it again, and then it was like hooked. And then you're angry because you're like, I'm not reading a two book series ever again because it's too good. And I've been waiting on Winds of Winter. I'm not the most torturous George R.R. fan, but I started around book three. When book three came out is kind of when I started. So I'm pretty tortured. I know there's people that started in the very beginning, one and two, and I feel really sorry for them, but I'm pretty tortured as well. I waited 5 years for A Dance of Dragons, and then I laid in my recliner. I think I read all 1,000 pages in like 4 days. And it's like, oh, now I read it all in 4 days, and now I'm on like a 9-year wait or whatever it is, 8-year wait. So,
yeah. Right. Well, if there's good news that comes from the coronavirus, maybe that's getting Gurm to sit down and write.
Yeah, that's a good point. I haven't thought of it that way. As long as he doesn't get it, I don't know if he can withstand it.
Yeah, that's true. He needs to isolate himself.
So we had Michael Beverly on our last podcast, and Michael and I.
Oh, very good.
We talked about you know, just kind of the do's and don'ts of Amazon ads, and you know, who it works best for, who not, and so we covered all the kind of the basic aspects. So I've got with you, I wanted to go a little more in depth. I'm going to give you some, hopefully test you a little bit on some of these little intricate parts of like Amazon ads and keywords and stuff. So my first
sounds question, good. Fire away.
My first question is, if you have a set, like a number that you really like in terms of impressions for keyword targeting, like once it hits a certain amount of impressions, and maybe you either haven't had any clicks or you've had a ton of clicks and they're not converting one way or the other in terms of sales, do you have kind of an impression magic number for the keyword targeting?
So I'm going to first caveat everything that I'm going to respond to in these with a statement that gives you an idea. But first off is it's very hard to give a general answer to every question because I feel as though certain books or certain niches or certain genres are always going to have a different answer. For example, if you're writing a nonfiction, okay, and you've chosen this particular niche down subject, your market is limited, okay? Like, it's really limited. An example is like, you know, I don't know, how to quit smoking in your 20s, or, you know, how to quit smoking when you're pregnant. You know, only those who are pregnant that have that issue right now would ever find your book to be valuable to them. So you can do all these ads and get all these thousands of impressions, but it may not convert because your market is very tiny. Now, with that said, though, I think fiction is a lot more of a broad general because there's a lot of fiction out there that I like. I wouldn't sit down and say I love all of these, but if a good looking book came across my browser as I'm shopping, it would grab my attention and I would look into it. I wouldn't consider myself a hard science fan, but if that looks good and oh, wow, that's a neat book description, I'll buy and read a hard science fiction book. So it's a little bit different. I definitely say there's a separation between fiction and nonfiction. Nonfiction would have different rules, but I do understand that a lot of your readers are more fiction. So I'm going to answer in generalization to fiction. Okay. So now that I've kind of given that, shall we say, caveat to it, when it comes to fiction, I like to see at least 100,000 impressions before I make any judgment calls. Okay. There's a lot of people who are like, oh, I did this campaign and, you know, it's got a total of like 10,000 impressions and here's the clicks and here's the ACoS and oh man, something's wrong with my book, you know, cause it's not converting well. And I'm like, whoa. 10,000 is too small of a sample size to really make a difference because maybe out of that 10,000 people, you just happen to have some grumpykins in there, people who were not shopping. So one easy rule of thumb I like to give is don't judge any data until at least 100,000 impressions.
Okay, yeah, so you're talking about obviously the overall Amazon ad. What about, so from my end, for a specific keyword, so say it's just the one keyword, like before I usually make any, unless it's just obviously, unless it's got like 37 clicks and zero sales and it's, you're spending all your money, My first tier is usually 3,000 for an individual keyword. Like within 3,000 impressions, I feel like you should have a little bit of an understanding how valuable that keyword is.
Yeah, that's probably a good number. One thing that I find, though, is that when I go to look at the individual keyword performance, I first like to look at, so I'll rearrange them from, you know, most impressions, and I'll rearrange them from most clicks, and I'll rearrange them from, you know, best ACoS. And for me, or conversion rate, actually, for me, that when I do that, I'm looking at, I like to think of the searcher's intent. I mean, that's the term that we're going to use a lot, is the searcher's intent. I'm trying to imagine the person who typed this in. I give myself almost this subjective opinion on, hey, was this a really good close? Like, can I explain why? Can I answer the question of why, I guess, is really it. Why did this one get so many impressions but no clicks? Well, okay, yeah, that was a bit far-fetched, right? Like it kind of was close to my book, but not exactly. Or, oh gosh, Amazon, how'd you get that keyword? You know, like, yes. What is that? Are you serious? Okay, got it. Let's kill that one off, because that's like worthless. Okay. Or another thing I ask myself is, why did I get the impressions? Or okay, maybe got the impressions, cool. But why did I get so many clicks? Now, a lot of times you can look at that keyword and be like, oh, man, that makes sense. Cool. Well, that doesn't make sense at all. Why does it not make sense? And it's when you try to answer the question why is where I found I have developed the best campaigns possible. For example, I was working with a lady. Now, this is a nonfiction example, but we'll drive the point here in a second. She had a keyword phrase that was really working well for her, but her book was about dealing with a loss of a pet. Okay. And we're looking at it. Her number one keyword that was bringing in by far the most impressions and clicks and sales. And I mean, like it was doubling her book, her normal book sales by itself, was a dog's life. Now, I didn't know anything. This is a year ago or so, but I didn't know anything about dogs. I'm a cat guy. And I'm not tracking or anything. So I asked her, I was like, why is this one doing so well? And she goes, well, I don't know. And so she looks on, like, she does a quick Google search, and she finds that there's a movie called A Dog's Life that was about to come out in theaters. So it was doing its major marketing push in the trailers and the commercials. And people were going to Amazon to see if there was a book, or, you know, if they could get the movie. Apparently a lot of people are looking for the movie. And since nobody was going after that term, her book was the only one that would show up. So she was getting in front of all of these people who were probably in some way had a pet loss. Apparently, I didn't watch the movie, but apparently it is about like a dog who, I think it's like the dog dies, but like, it keeps coming back as a new dog or something, coming back to the same family. But it's about, I mean, the dog dies.
Yeah.
So it was a huge connection. And we never would have understood this if we didn't ask ourselves the question why and then find the answer. And from there, we built a full-blown campaign that was centered around dog movies.
Yeah.
Because, hey, if this one movie is moving the needle so far, why not focus on that? And so we built out an entire campaign for it. And it was, not only was it super successful when that particular movie came out, but it helped to keep continuous sales moving afterwards. So for the fiction authors out there, a little hot tip for you is, I always like to have one campaign that's centered around famous movies in my genre.
That's a good idea. I'll have to take that tip and run with it. So we have a book that we're still marketing that's doing very well, called The 5 Wishes of Mr. Murray McBride. And for about 6 months, the keyword is kind of dead now, finally, or at least ACoS-wise, it doesn't hit as much. But for some reason, we had one of our first ads on that book, the keyword wish, W-I-S-H. That was it. And that keyword was running at like a 30% ACoS. We were getting winning bids between like 15 and 25 cents and like getting a conversion of like one out of five, one out of six. And it was crazy. And I kept looking, like I go to Amazon and be like, I type in Wish, like Kindle store, Wish. What? And all I could ever find was there was one book and it's a children's little book called Wish. And I'm like, I don't know how our fiction book is literary coming of age. You know, the target audience that's been selling the most to is probably like 50 plus. A lot of paperback readers buy it paperback, older audience. And I'm like, I don't know where this is converting, but people are somehow searching. Maybe it's a different string of keywords where Wish is involved and it keeps putting our book on there. But whatever it was a, you know, just one of those where you just run with it.
Now, question for you is that when that happened, I don't know if they had the feature at that time, but there was an ability to look at what, so you may have set the word Wish or somehow Amazon came up with the idea of Wish. And when you look in your campaign, it will say Wish and we'll say how it's doing, but there's now the ability for us to be able to look at the exact keyword that was driving that. And so when we look at that, you can start to see, so like if you did a broad match for the word, maybe it was like Wish Master, I don't know, say that was the actual keyword you entered into it. But since you selected broad match, what you're telling Amazon is, hey, look for kind of some combinations of the words. Look for pluralization, look for a little bit of synonymous, like you guys kind of find the opportunities, right? And I love broad match because through broad match, I can find things I never would have thought of or, you know, that were generated. And remember, we only pay Amazon if somebody sees it, sees our book, is interested and clicks on it. So I'm cool with giving them opportunities to find that. But again, is that when we look at the actual phrase that drove it in, just knowing why can be like the $1 million answer. If you had found the exact why, that could have been something to build an entire campaign around and even drive it more. So just going back to that first question is I look at those things and I ask myself why. Why is this failing? And a lot of times you could just quickly figure it out. But then why is this succeeding? And that knowledge is powerful, not just for that particular campaign or that particular keyword. It's powerful because it gives you an understanding of your market, and that can drive better decisions across the board from everything, from what you send in an email to how you construct other advertisements or even just your natural keywords that you should target or things you should think about. It's an insight into Amazon telling you that when we showed your book for this general market, boy, did they like it. And I like to take it that way. So try to answer the question why.
Yeah, so I know you're talking about the search terms and stuff, and I don't know. I'm trying to think, it was probably early 2019 and they might have just added that or hadn't added it yet, but I use it now, but I don't remember using it then to go in and look at, you know, all the conversions in the sea, like you said, you know, here's the keyword and here's the exact term that somebody typed in. So that would be good. I might have to go and see if I can find that just to look at it. So,
yeah. Another example of this working too, was the time where I was working with Pat Flynn, and we were looking at his book on Will It Fly, which is a book that's centered around figuring out if your business idea will succeed. And through all the ones that we generated, we used kind of Rocket to develop a huge list. We tried to break them up into different campaigns based off of searcher intent. And one of the ones that, I mean, just truly rocked for him was the phrase, Ivanka Trump. Now, can you guess as to the why that worked? A book about whether or not your business idea will succeed. And the name Ivanka Trump makes that book huge seller.
Well, I mean, you're getting something that's probably, you know, time-wise and current event-wise, you were getting something that was probably searched, had some good search terms and search time, and then obviously a business-minded person and family. That would be kind of my guess initially.
Yeah, so what we discovered was that most people were probably doing advertisement. And again, this is not political. I'm not being political. A lot of people were probably thinking to do advertisement for Donald Trump, right? You know, it's big figure, big in business and everything. Because we put in the term Ivanka Trump, it allowed us to, like, Amazon still showed us for Donald Trump, but they showed us also for Ivanka Trump and all the other Trump family members. And what we were able to combine was, is that a lot of people were looking for, and again, not being political, just trying to answer the question why, but a lot of people were looking for women entrepreneurs. Now, if Ivanka Trump is an entrepreneur, I don't know. That's, I'm sure some people could argue that to an extent, but people were. And so what we did was we designed an entire campaign that centered around famous female entrepreneurs, and with the idea of, will your book idea succeed? Or excuse me, will your business idea succeed? Get the steps to learn how. And just by doing that, we saw that, you know, that we were hitting a certain market and that they were really searching for it. Nobody was going after that. Nobody had thought of it. And that became by far the most successful campaign, even more successful than anything related to Pat Flynn's name. So again, just by asking why and trying to figure out this searcher's intent, you can come up with some of those incredible ideas. And I'm going to give one more example of this, and then we're going to go to fiction this time. I was working with a author who was writing in hard science, and that's why I brought it out, because I don't really like hard science. Like, I get it, but I'm cool. And we had a keyword term, again, using Rocket, it generated this list, and it was a brief history of time, Galaxy in a Nutshell, I think. It was the one that was written by who's the scientist that is in his wheelchair and has to use a computer to speak?
Hawkins. Yes, Steve. Right? Yeah.
Stephen Hawkins. There we go. It was one of his books. And I'm like, but we're in fiction and this is science fiction. Why is a Stephen Hawking's book driving all these sales? And then I started thinking about it, and I looked at another keyword, and again, it was a physics textbook. And I'm like, why is a physics textbook driving fiction sales? And so when we really looked at it, we came up with the hypothesis that this was because physics and quantum physics textbooks and, you know, explanations, simple explanations of string theory and quantum mechanics, et cetera, all of those books were a perfect tie-in for hard science because fiction authors weren't thinking to market to the real science nerds. And real science nerds apparently like their hard fiction, which for those that don't know, hard sci-fi is, it's where you write science fiction, but you do a really, really good job of making sure it's as accurate and legit as possible. Like The Martian, okay? Where he basically is like, yeah, NASA scientists could read this and say, yeah, that's pretty legit. That's hard science fiction. Or The Expanse, the TV series is based off of a whole bunch of books that are hard science. You don't just get to change trajectory quickly while you're in space flying at thousands of miles. You have to course correct, and it could take you eight hours before you can finally turn a little bit. Like, that's more realistic than like Star Wars, where he's pulling, you know, zero G's out of thousands of miles per hour and it's no problem with his body.
Yeah, so someone,
so when we,
I was just gonna say, someone went on the search for quantum physics and like you said, and then they saw a hard science fiction book and they realized they didn't really want to read quantum physics. They wanted to be entertained by this hard science fiction.
Well, and they probably still bought their textbook, but the fact of the matter is that these hard science guys, these guys who are nerds, there's a very good, easy connection between, if I'm shopping for physics books, I probably like science fiction. And this is an opportunity where you're getting your book in front of the right market. They might not be looking for you directly, but just by getting in front of them, you're grabbing their attention. It's like interruptive marketing. And we would not have known this if we hadn't have looked at the keywords and asked ourselves the major question of why. So I ask you, look through them and subjectively answer that question, and you may find the best strategy possible, the best campaign moving forward, and you'll get that great ROI.
So we've got a title. Again, this is going back to five wishes. This is kind of a bid question. So say, you know, you're bidding on your own title keywords, and Amazon's suggested yep. bid is, you know, whatever, say it's a much higher than what your bid is. So I think suggested bid was like a dollar. Our bid was at like 56 cents or something. And, you know, the average cost per click was at 16 cents, and it's converting, you know, you're protecting your own title a little bit, I guess. But I was wondering your thoughts mm-hmm. on, you know, should you, because your average cost per click, you know, Amazon's only charging you 16 cents because obviously it's a high conversion because it's the title of your book. But should you leave your bid? I mean, is there a scale on how high? I mean, should you bid higher and go ahead and bid, you know, $1.18 if that's their suggested bid, or just leave it, you know, where it is?
That's a really hard question to ask because I've seen the answer be one way and the answer be another. So I don't really have a general answer for you to say that that's always going to work. In that case, I've had it where, let me put it this way. Most of the time, if I'm spending, say, 16 cents and they say I should increase the suggested bid to something and I increase it to their suggestion, I normally don't see, okay, normally don't see my bids increase, but I do see my impressions increase.
Right.
I think it just gives me more of a statement to Amazon that I'm willing to pay more. And so Amazon's like, well, then let's show this guy more. But Amazon's still pretty honest, as far as I can tell, of being like, well, it only really costs you 16 cents. So cool. There you go. Just pay us 16. You don't have to pay us the 150 that you put in there. I have had it where I have, and I say this is now the minority, okay, is I've increased the bid and all of a sudden my impressions actually went down. I don't know if maybe that was the market at the time. You know, the market just went down at the time when I did that. So it's really hard to say. I say experiment, but understand there are a lot of factors. The one thing I do dislike most about Amazon ads is that, you know, one person could do one thing and be like, I did this one thing and then this happened. Oh my gosh. It's like, it's such a dynamic market. It's really hard to pinpoint that one thing was what actually caused it. But when I talk to Amazon ads marketers, one thing that I always tell everybody is that Amazon ads, it's like a skill. Okay. You know, you if you want to learn juggling, right, it's a skill. You got to, over time, the more you do it, the better you can. Over time, you'll add more balls and all of a sudden you're juggling even more. But there's a statement that my captain, when I was on a submarine, used to say, and I love it to this day. He said that the word mastery, okay, like mastering a skill, is a misnomer. Matter of fact, I think it's fake. He was like, but here's the right word for it, intuition. The people who have mastered something usually have greater intuition to the right decision, okay? And how do you get intuition? You need two things. You need knowledge plus experience. And when you have those two things together, you have greater intuition. The people who are really good at Amazon ads have seen it. They know it and they've seen it. They've experienced, they've experimented, they've saw things. And when they look at that situation, they just have the intuition of, this is probably what I should do based off of all the values I see, and they make the right decision. It's like Warren Buffett. The dude's got major intuition in the stock market, right? He just has the things. It's not like there's the right answer. There is no such thing as mastery, but he can usually pull the right decision quicker than most of us because of his experience and his knowledge combined. So when I talk about Amazon ads, the more you work with it, the more you experiment, the more you'll get the feeling of when one should and when one should not.
Yeah, more for Warren Buffett's case, got more hits than misses. So that's the key.
That's exactly it.
So on the...
And sometimes it is the right decision, just not at the right time.
Right.
I mean, that's a really good analogy, the stock market. He made the right decision. He just invested a whole bunch into the airlines. And yeah, maybe it was a couple of weeks too early to do that, but he's probably smart enough to know that in the long run, it's probably going to work.
Yeah, it's going to be. That's how I feel. It's going to be good. So on, I know you're. You know, we talked about broad keywords a lot of times. You know, there's some instances where, you know, specific keywords might be better, but I'm a fan of the broad keywords. But I was going to ask you, so if you have, say, your broad keyword is The Outsider by Stephen King, do you need a keyword that says The Outsider and a keyword that says Stephen King? So now you've got three keywords, or is The Outsider by Stephen King going to cover everything?
Well, so technically The Outsider, okay, should cover everything, technically. So if you've chosen broad, you've given Amazon the liberty to show The Outsider book. Are you going to show up for the word Stephen King? Probably not, because Amazon needs a little bit more direct statement from you that a phrase like Stephen King is something you really want. They already have enough people probably trying to advertise for Stephen King, so you're just not going to show up. Whereas if you're targeting, say, a smaller book, okay, it's the title of a book and there is an author, Amazon, and nobody's probably targeting the author's name. Amazon, from what I've seen, will naturally put you for that name in case somebody does type it in. There are, I think, other factors that go into it. I think that they look and say, okay, yeah, this, his book is science fiction. He's targeting this, what looks like a title, because let's remember, a lot of titles could honestly just be a regular word. So they don't know for sure that it's a title. Could be a description. But okay, here is a phrase that is a title. They're both science fiction. Let's just put them up for that author's name in case somebody types it in as well. Like, that's the way that I see it happening. But just because you put in something super competitive, like, you know, title of a Stephen King book, I don't think you're going to be lucky enough to just naturally show up for the word Stephen King, which a lot of people probably target. So I think the answer to this is it depends on the competitiveness of the author. But I do think that Amazon, if you're in broad search, you're giving them the ability to interpret some data a bit and to show you.
Great. Okay. I've got a couple kind of Amazon ad and kind of in the Amazon seven keywords. The first one is a simple question that I really haven't always heard a definitive answer, but does the order of your seven keywords that you put on KDP or put in Kindle, does the order of them matter? Like, is there a very significant, you know, anything relevant on that? Okay.
No. I can say that definitively. We did a experiment, you probably know of it, where we had over 120 authors submit their seven keyword, whatever they put in the seven boxes for their book. We looked at it, we asked ourselves, okay, did they try to fill in all 50 of the characters, or is this a specific phrase? We then went back to those authors and asked them to switch them to either make it that they filled in all 50 or just the individual phrase. We also analyzed what words were in their title and subtitle and the order, everything. We looked at those things. And what I can tell you is that the order in which you put the seven had no effect on any of the books that we worked on. Furthermore, we also found that there was no change in the book if the keyword was in the title and subtitle and also in the seven Kindle keywords. It didn't matter. So to answer your question, nope. The order in which you put them in does not affect it. And also, if that keyword is also in the title or subtitle, does it help to put
good,
it in again?
Good, because I follow both of those practices. So that's a good thing. And also, okay, so this is something I've noticed between the seven keywords. So say you have a keyword string, or, you know, say it's, you know, like noir mystery 1950s or whatever. And say that's getting searched on, you know, say you use Publisher Rocket and you search and it says, man, it's getting searched 3,000 times, you know, 4,000 times in a month. And there's not, you know, not even that much competition. So say you use that keyword now in your Amazon ad. I've noticed that those keyword strings that aren't, you know, like the main ones, like a historical fiction or mystery fiction, when they're more specified, I've noticed that they seem to be very hard to get impressions. And so I was going to get your thoughts on that, because from one end, you're looking at saying, well, people are searching for this on, you know, based on testing it and based on Publisher Rocket, it's saying it's getting searches. It's a good keyword. But then when we try to use it as an Amazon ad keyword, it just seems, you know, there's no bid high enough. There's not, you know, there's not a lot of traction.
Yeah, I'm not sure. There's a lot of factors that could play into that. The first of the matter is one could say there are like because Amazon has the ability to interpret and go on. Say for example, you target just, you know,
yeah, like noir mystery 1950. So like something very specific, but it's still showing, you know, something that Pub Rocket says, hey, you can, you should use this keyword. It's relevant.
Yep. So what Amazon Ads will do is that say you just put mystery noir, noir mystery, or black noir mystery, or whatever. Amazon will also go on and try to tack on some of the other sub phrases that come after it. So a lot of times you may target specifically, and that does help you much more than the others, but you're still competing against some of the more broader phrases that people chose a broad match on. So you could be competing. Now, if you're constantly seeing your book at the top, in the ads, just make sure that you're in incognito mode to make sure that, you know, Amazon's not saying, hey, this guy likes, you know, noir mystery. He keeps searching for it. So let's show him this ad, you know. It's weird, but it's like, why would you show my own? Like, you know, I set up the ad. You know this. Why would you do that? But they do it. But if you're in incognito mode, they can't use your previous history data to be able to try to influence what they show you. But if even in incognito mode that you're seeing your book is still being advertised and it's not being clicked, I'm not sure at that point. I don't know what would be the cause.
Yeah, so I created a series of ads for different Black Rose Writing titles and just tested. So whatever their seven keywords were, I went through and put those specifically in those, you know, some of them were some pretty detailed strings and just put them in and tried to test. And very rarely could you get, you know, enough impressions or any, you know, anything that was relevant off of those. I just found that kind of interesting to test. Obviously author names, even generic terms sometimes, but those keywords were hard to target on Amazon ads. Maybe need to bid a little higher.
It could be, yeah. Bids, competition, swells in the market, popularity, conversion rates, they're all major dynamic pieces to Amazon's decision to show one book over another. So which one was the reason, I can't say. And yeah, in text match, right? So you specifically type that in, like you should have a higher chance of showing for it. But the big thing for Amazon is their focus is what makes them more money. That's always kind of the way, if you're ever analyzing Amazon, you're trying to figure something out, just ask yourself, well, they either do this or this. And then ask yourself, well, which one probably makes them more money? Well, that one, there you go. That's probably the right answer. So they want to have the highest conversions and they don't get paid unless they get clicks. So sometimes, you know, the answer is, well, yeah, you're bidding higher, but this guy who has less of a bid is making us more money because more people are clicking it. Therefore, we're not going to do that. Sometimes sales history, this is a theory of mine, but sometimes sales history plays a big part too. Amazon knows that your book is pretty good. Amazon's probably not going to charge you more to do an ad because they know they have a higher chance of you getting clicked over this guy who's only got a couple of sales or, you know, is kind of new. Again, there's a lot of things that can play into it. That's always why it comes down to ask yourself those two questions, right? The why and the
Amazon. It's a two part. From my end, it's the first part is like you said, the keywords they'll serve are ones that are getting tons of clicks. They're okay with that. Like if it's just getting click, 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 click. But then the second part is if it's getting clicked and it's getting purchased. Now Amazon's really winning. We're all winning, but Amazon is really winning. You're paying for clicks, and now they're actually paying for the product. And those obviously are going to always serve out over any other books.
Exactly. And another thing to add in there too, because I know we have to wrap up soon. But one thing I would say is that Amazon is also particular about making sure that they don't overload the system with ads. There are a lot of terms that I'm just like, oh my gosh, like I would love to show up for this. And I noticed that there's no ads that show up for that term whatsoever, you know, or for this book. And I think Amazon right now is just trying to figure out the balance. I've seen a couple of terms that I'm kind of getting pissed at Amazon for, because I'm like, every other book is an advertisement. Like what the flip? And, you know, I typed in science fiction, space marines, and I don't want love, sci-fi, erotica, whatever this stuff is. Like, there's more shoot 'em up Marines. And I think they're trying
to. It doesn't matter what you type in, you're always going to have one erotica on your list. They find the way in.
Yeah, I'm like, man, this is so non-romance. Like, why would you even do that? Now, the good thing for the author who paid for that ad is I didn't click on it, so it didn't cost him a thing, so it's no worries for him. But at the same time, Amazon doesn't want to make it to the point where we're deterred from the accuracy of their results. Like, I will stop shopping on Amazon and perhaps turn to Barnes and Noble on iTunes when the time comes where I can't seem to find what I'm looking for because I'm always inundated with products that are not the kind that I'm looking for. So they're working it. Like I said, you'll see some terms where there are no ads for it, or there are a lot less ads than there are for another one. And then 2 weeks later, you may look and you'll see it
All right,
change
I've
again.
got
So.
our short story section. Seven quick questions. You ready? Favorite thing to do
Okay.
outdoors?
Oof. Do I have to go outdoors? I guess
Name a place you
scuba.
haven't been but someday want to travel to, but not obviously not anytime soon. Favorite
New
sports
Zealand.
team? Favorite
Red Sox. Packers. Red Sox
city
Packers.
in the United States outside of Tennessee? Favorite
Austin.
food in the Franklin, Nashville area?
Bourbon caramel latte. I know it's not a food, but it's a food for my soul.
Have you okay? So this is my Franklin research. Have you tackled or your kids or anybody the Soar Adventure Tower in Franklin? Because it looked like something I would do.
The Venture
It's
Tower.
yeah.
Is oh, Soar. Yes. Oh yeah. My 6-year-old daughter had a birthday
Yes, it
party
looked
there.
like a it
I
has
love
like
it.
four levels of climbing, and I was like, man, I'm gonna be the one that makes it to the top of this thing one day, like if I ever visit Franklin.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. But
Nope.
if you have a fear of heights,
Nope,
it's a
I'm
good
good
thing if you can
there.
get
I
over it.
fixed roof leaks on like four or five story apartment buildings and was the guy that didn't have the OSHA wouldn't appreciate hearing it, but like the no harness, no nothing, just on the edge of roofs. So worst job you've ever had.
Dishwasher at a
Awesome.
diner in Wisconsin.
Thanks, Dave. If you want to plug anything real quick, anything you want to mention, please feel free to go ahead.
No, if anybody has any questions, just be sure to hit me on the contact page at
All right, I
kindlepreneur.com.
appreciate you coming on. We will edit, cut it right there. I know we got about 3 minutes to your next appointment, but again, I very much appreciate you coming on the show. We'll air it not this Friday, but the next Friday at like 8 a.m. Central Time, and our PR team will tag you on everything. So,
That sounds good.
yeah,
Awesome.
we
Glad
got
to
to
have helped.
cover hopefully a few things that really haven't been covered. So, too much. So,
Awesome.
have a great
Well,
rest of your day. And
very
again,
cool.
once travel be returns, hopefully we can get together maybe and I'll buy you a dinner sometime.
That
All right.
sounds good to me. All
You too.
right.
Thanks,
You
Dave.
take care of yourself.
The audio got a little overlaid for the last few minutes of the interview with Dave Chesson. And so, just to reiterate, if you want more information on connecting with Dave Chesson, it's kindlepreneur.com. And get ready for next week's interview, or I should say, in 2 weeks with the Duncan Hunter thriller author, Mark A. Hewitt. And I can't go back to yesterday because I was a different person then.